This is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College. Hi, I'm Isabella.
I'm Alana.
And I'm Constantina.
We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we're exploring the story of women's ordination in Reconstructionist Judaism, the United Methodist Church, the Inside Meditation Society, and the Presbyterian Church, USA. To do so, we've interviewed women in each of these traditions, talking about women's ordination activism and the experience of being ordained. In this episode, we're going to look at the Presbyterian Church, USA, which is also known as PCUSA. We interviewed two clergywomen, Reverend Michelle Wallen and Reverend Catherine Scott Kirshner, about their experience surrounding their call to ordination, role models they had growing up in the church, the struggles of being clergywomen in the church, and so much more.
Even though women have been heavily involved in the church since the 19th century, the Presbyterian Church USA has had a tumultuous relationship with women's ordination. For many years, women were not allowed to take leadership positions in the church. In 1930, women were allowed to become elders, and finally, in 1956, the first woman was ordained as a minister. These changes took time and advocacy from many different groundbreaking women who wanted to share their call with the church. Now, many women serve as clergy people and ministers across the country.
We first wanted to know where it all began for our interviewees, where their passion for preaching began. Did this call come early in life? Did it come out of the blue? It is important to note that every journey is different, and this was reflected in both Reverend Scott Kirshner and Reverend Wallen's accounts. First, here's Reverend Wallen.
I, from a young age, really enjoyed studying the Bible, and I taught Sunday school with my dad growing up, and I felt called to preaching and becoming a pastor when I was a high school student. I went to a small Presbyterian college in the inland Northwest in Spokane, Washington, called Whitworth University, and the chaplain at the time was a woman. And so when I was 18, that was when I saw someone who looked like me in the pulpit. And I thought, oh yes, like it is possible for people who look like me to do this.
Reverend Scott Kirshner had a very different experience in her call. Here, she relates her experience as a college student at Smith College in 2010.
And I was actually called to pastor while at the campus center. I was having lunch with other Presbyterians, and I felt God tell me that I needed to go into ministry. And so it was not a lifelong ambition. I was 19 when I got the call to go into ministry, and I wasn't 1,000% sure what that meant when I received the call while sitting in the Smith College campus center. And yet I decided to follow the call and carried forth that goal, that project, that decision. I always like to joke that I was so stubborn, God literally had to tell me to go into ministry. And I'm so glad that God did, because my life is so enriched by my work. And I just have the best job in the entire world.
Many women, when deciding to answer their call to preach, continue their journey within the community they grew up in if women's ordination is accepted within their denomination. Reverend Scott Kirshner explained her connection to the PCUSA from a very young age.
One of the things is I've just always felt home in the Reformed tradition. So I also always valued the social priorities of the PCUSA being one of the mainline denominations. It is more overall, not everyone, not every congregation, not every person. It is more liberal standing, which I always valued. The church I grew up in was not that. They were more on the conservative spectrum of things, and they left the denomination when the denomination was getting ready to accept LGBTQIA plus ministers to be ministers of word and sacrament, to be pastors. And that's when they left the denomination. Or they knew that was coming. And that broke my heart.
Of course, not all PCUSA clergywomen grew up in the denomination. Reverend Wallen here recounts her life in a more conservative evangelical church and the reasons she decided to convert to the PCUSA.
My grandmother on my dad's side was Presbyterian. And that was my only other like reference point for a different way of being Protestant at that point in my life. And I went to a Presbyterian college, and that's where I really learned like more about what their beliefs look like. But I also really loved that the Presbyterian Church has a very different theology of salvation in particular. The denomination I grew up in was so focused on whether or not someone had the relationship with God set up the correct way in order to be truly a Christian. And they had the strong belief that they knew the best way and the only way to have that kind of relationship. And I never felt like that was right, but I'd never had language for it. And in college, as I studied Presbyterian beliefs and learned more about how they understand salvation in a different way, it gave me a vocabulary for what like internally felt right and true that I didn't have language for growing up.
Converting is not always easy. It can come with general pushback, which Reverend Wallen speaks about openly.
It was very lonely the first I think that first 5 years of while I was in college exploring this call to ministry, like I think if I didn't have a supportive friend group in college and mentors around me who encouraged me to continue in the face of the opposition from my family and my congregation back home, I don't think I could have done it.
Next, we asked about the background of our interviewees, how their backgrounds influenced their approaches to ministry, and how communities reacted when they shared their call to preach. Some ministers are well supported by those around them, but unfortunately, others face doubt and discouragement, which is shown through Reverend Wallen's account of her experience.
So my home church growing up, which is Calvary Chapel, Modesto, is still to this day a very conservative church where women cannot be pastors or preach. And so I lost the majority of my friends that I grew up with when I became an ordained minister. They believe that what I'm doing is unbiblical, that it is like against the will of God for women to preach. And even my parents were against me going to graduate school to study religion to become a pastor. And my father says still doesn't believe women should be ministers. My mother has come around, but it was very difficult for like both my extended family, my immediate family, and my home congregation. Like to accept it.
Thankfully, this is not a universal experience. In other cases, women share their call and are surrounded by a community which is excited for them. Reverend Scott Kirshner, for example, felt encouraged to pursue her call in the PCUSA.
And I was raised PCUSA, the church, from the time I was an itty bitty infant until my senior year of high school, was a member church of the PCUSA, the Presbyterian Church USA. But they left the denomination in late 2009, early 2010, which was my senior year of high school. And when they left, I was incredibly sad about that choice. And so I went to Smith not having a church home. So it's kind of hard for me to answer because by the time I reached out to another Presbyterian church community, I already knew this was what I was felt called to do. There is, or at least there was, a tiny, tiny little Presbyterian church near Mount Holyoke in South Hadley, like a teeny tiny, teeny, teeny tiny. And I started going there once or twice a month, and they loved the fact that I felt called to be a pastor. So that was like my first church-ish community I was a part of that I shared this news and was ever so wholeheartedly accepted and celebrated for that call to preach and lead in churches.
We wanted to know a little bit more about Reverend Scott Kirshner and Reverend Wallen's experiences with women in their church growing up, and if any served as role models in their lives. Often role models play an essential role in developing our own sense of selves, and can help shape our career aspirations, what we study in college, and even what core values we hold as people. However, what happens when female leadership in the church is rare, if not discouraged? What roles do women end up taking? Here, Reverend Wallen reflects on growing up in an evangelical church.
It was fairly common in my church growing up that the male pastor who was married to a woman would, like, their wife would be, like, doing almost as much labor as they were, and they were unpaid. But they were essentially, like, co-pastoring with their spouse. So there were several women in my, like, childhood who I saw leading, doing everything except preaching. They were doing everything else. And I didn't know that they weren't, I didn't fully understand that they couldn't be pastors until I was older, because I experienced them as leading alongside their spouses or leading independently of their spouses. My church growing up had like a women's ministry director who was never called the pastor for women's ministry, but she essentially was. But all the men had that title. So she would, like, you know, give a talk on something at a retreat. But I always struggled to understand, like, why they called what she did a talk and what a pastor did a sermon. And my dad told me it was because sermons happen on Sunday mornings and only men can do that. And women can give talks and that can happen anytime.
This idea of women doing everything but is a common occurrence in groups that do not ordain women. Women are allowed to support their church in super impactful ways, often doing the roles of pastors, but they're never quite classified as ministers or preachers, and are often not paid for their labors. Reverend Scott Kirshner grew up in a time when women could be PCUSA pastors, yet she did not remember experiencing a woman as a pastor in her formative childhood congregation.
And when I was really little, there was a head pastor who was a man, and then there was an associate pastor who was a woman. And so I don't really remember her, but my mom would talk about her, you know, after we had left the church and that associate pastor had left, my mom would talk about the female associate pastor. So I always knew that was a possibility. The church I went to from, like, until I was 5 through 18, the really formative one, didn't have any female pastors. I never saw a woman preach in my home church. The one that I considered, like, my home church growing up. But I never doubted that a woman could, if that makes sense. It just wasn't part of my experience growing up. There were women elders. So in the Presbyterian church, the elders are the people who make the decisions on behalf of the church. They sit on the session. And there were women elders at my church, so I always knew you could hold positions of leadership. They just never had a female pastor that I saw preach ever.
It's interesting to see how the role of these women played in the church almost subconsciously shaped Reverend Wallen and Reverend Scott Kirshner's ideas about what women in the church actually did. Clearly, these two women have grown past these traditional ideas, as they both now serve as ministers in their respective congregations. Given their diverse experience, we wondered what misconceptions they wish they could address on a scale beyond their congregations.
Both Reverend Wallen and Reverend Scott Kirshner agree that there are many negative misconceptions and stereotypes that still exist, even within some congregations that ordain women, and these weigh down on clergy women. Here, Reverend Wallen reflects on some of these stereotypes.
I think that some of the, like, common stereotypes about, I would say, like, the, like, a cishet idea of what women are and do and be really influences women, the perception of women in a, like, preaching or, like, ministry setting. I see that particularly with women as it relates to, like, ministry with families and children, there's this assumption that often that congregational members will have that a woman pastor will be better with children than a male pastor, or a woman pastor will be more empathetic than a male pastor, and kind of assign skills and personality traits based on gender, these like gender binaries that like don't always like that, and that breaks down like very quickly. Like I was a youth pastor before I was ordained, in Presbyterian churches while I was a graduate student, and a little bit like after that, and I would often see the pastors that I worked with, like there was one who was male and one who was female, and every time like they would be asked different questions or asked different like to take on different tasks based on their gender or their or people's like assumptions about their skills. And that impacted me because I was training to become a pastor, but I was not given opportunities to preach as often. And some of in like one of the churches where I was a youth pastor, in one of the churches, the pastor there, who was a man, he was the father of two daughters, and his wife was also a pastor. He asked me to preach like often, and encouraged me in my ministry goals. And then I moved to a different church, and at the next church, they were like, "Well, you're the youth pastor. That's what you do. Like, you don't preach on Sundays. You're here to play games with the kids and take them to camp, and that's kind of it." But I, it was really fascinating to even see the way that like my supervisor at the second church, who was a woman, had internalized this idea and was perpetuating that like stereotype.
Much of this has to do with everyday struggles that ordained women continue to face. Reverend Wallen reflects on how she sees her gender affect her preaching experience and how misogyny is still present, even in a progressive environment.
I have so many stories of like sexual harassment, objectification, like congregants treating my body like a public object to comment on, like after church in the receiving line, commenting on whether or not I'm wearing makeup or if my earrings were distracting to them while I was preaching, or commenting on whether or not I was wearing heels or no heels or whatever. So lots of like physical commentary, even about like weight and all like the whole like spectrum. And when I was younger, it would always take me by surprise and I wouldn't know how to respond. I would just think, I'd be like, what is happening right now? Why are they saying that? I don't even know what to say, because I want to say something rude, but I can't because I'm their pastor. I want to say something protective to protect myself. And what I do now is say, I'm surprised you feel so comfortable saying that to me, to like express my like shock about it. And then some people, they like it like disarms them and they're like, wait, what's happening? Like they just like don't know how to respond to that, but it stops. Because they're like, it makes them pause and think, oh, did what I say offend her? Or why is this bothering her? Yeah, I think I do see that happen with my male colleagues sometimes, but not to the same degree.
The clergywoman that we interviewed highlighted how important it is for churches to be welcoming to people, whether that means having more ordained women in ministry or having a more steadfast allegiance to LGBTQ people and emphasizing that not just for their congregants, but also for the overall denomination.
One big thing is just the continued prevalence of female pastors. The more there are, the more it's discussed, the more it's seen as normal. The trends in seminary currently, just like the trends in universities currently, more women are going to both university, like undergrad and seminary. That is the reality we find ourselves in. Women are becoming more educated than men, and more women are going to seminary, which means more women are going to be available for pastors. So I think that's a big part, right? Of just like seeing it in action and seeing how those churches can minister to the people, both in the congregation and in their communities, and how well that can be done. I'm not saying better than male leadership, just how well it can be done, regardless of someone's gender or gender identity.
So the PCUSA is the is only there are only two denominations that are Presbyterian in North America that ordain women, the PCUSA and the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. But the Cumberland Presbyterian Church takes a like a stronger stance against LGBTQ rights and ordination and leadership, and so as a like bisexual non-binary woman, I could not be a pastor in any other Presbyterian denomination besides the one that I'm in right now. So, that is like a significant barrier because there are so many qualified people who end up joining other denominations or go into other careers because they don't have access to the like positions that they would like to apply for.
The historic relationship between the Presbyterian Church and women's ordination is complicated, but it is fortunate that for pastors like Reverend Michelle Wallen and Reverend Catherine Scott Kirshner, there was a light at the end of the tunnel. Now the Presbyterian Church of the USA embraces women's ordination. Although this role may come with inherent struggles, women are following their call to ministry and sharing their passions from the pulpit.
Well, this episode actually wraps up our series for this season of Women's Rights. We've had the privilege of talking to such interesting, engaged clergywomen in Reconstructionist Judaism, the United Methodist Church, the Insight Meditation Society, and finally, the Presbyterian Church of the USA. We are truly so grateful for all that we've been able to learn from them. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we hope that you've learned a little bit more about women's ordination through this series.
Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Reverend Michelle Wallen and Reverend Catherine Scott Kirshner for their time. Also, thanks to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richter of the Smith Learning Research and Technology team. Thanks to the Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. And finally, special shout out to Juliana, who helped organize and put together this podcast from behind the scenes. Her work was truly invaluable in the production of this episode. Tune in next time on Women's Rights.